The second commandment. You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything, in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. Okay. Those who hate him get punished to the third and fourth generation. I don't think that's saying he's going to hold great-grandson responsible for what great-grandfather did. It's saying that sin flows downhill. Yeah. His father treats children a certain way. He keeps going down. But then it says, showing love to 1,000 generations of those that love me and keep my commands. Okay? It's only been 140 generations since Abraham. And he said he promised 1,000 generations. So we have a two-way street here. It says, turn the hearts of the children to the fathers, hearts of the fathers to the children, or strike the lamb of the curse. And we see this 3 or 4 generations downhill and 1,000 generations uphill. Okay, so well, you say, I'm in the second generation going downhill. I'm a third, fourth. How do I turn around? Well, that's the major emphasis of what I'm going to teach today. But all babies, both sexes, need much love and much respect from both sexes of parents. If they get much love and much respect from both sexes of parents, they grow up normal. If they're shortchanged with any one of those, from any one of the sexes, they end up a little bit abnormal. They make adjustments, but the adjustments are not always good adjustments. So you see a lot of kids that are just skewed because they didn't get enough love from their father. And it's a situation, if a girl ends up being boy crazy in teenage years, very likely she did get enough love from her father. And she's normal, and she just starved for male affection, and some guy says he loves her. He doesn't love her, he loves himself. But nevertheless, she's starved for loving affection. If she doesn't get enough, if the boy doesn't get enough love of his father, he may also be looking for male affection and end up homosexual. And if the daughter's not getting enough love from her mother, ends up looking for female affection. So there's all kinds of ways of being shortchanged. But if you're giving enough love to each of them, they end up normal. This is independent of whether it's a Christian family or not, but it's better, like more likely in a Christian family. One time we were living in this house. Heather was her senior year. And she has a whole upstairs. It's a big one room. And she lived up there, and I went up to tuck her into bed and kiss her goodnight. She is 17 years old. She's dead. I know why you're doing this. I said, why? She said, you're afraid I'm going to get my loving someplace else. I said, right on. Right on. A little preventive maintenance here. But she was secure. She passed a couple guys, made them get lockers in the high school, and then even mocking, talked to her. She said, Jesus, love you, and she's from. She said, yes, he does. She came home when she was 15. We lived right next to the high school. And the kids smoked in her backyard, get off the high school grounds. She's coming home for lunch. walked in, and there's a big smile on her face. I said, what's funny? She said, see those two guys over there? I said, yeah, I see them. She said, they yelled at me. I said, well? She yelled at me and said, Heather, we'd like a part of your body. I said, Heather? What did you do? She said, I just smiled and said, sorry, I don't want any part of yours. But anyhow, she was secure. She went to Egypt alone. The missionary went to Turkey alone. She walked through the streets of Istanbul with a rolled up Time magazine just to hit anybody who made the passage. Now, but anyhow, she's a secure family. You can tell that although both sexes need love and respect, pretty soon the boy needs respect more than he needs love. And the girl needs love more than she needs respect. They both need both. How can you know? The girl begins to flirt and the boy begins to brag. It's a dumb way to get love, but it is saying that's what she wants. It's a dumb way to get respect, but that's what I'm saying she wants it now. Now, what we have is parents, fathers, and mothers may not have done this. So somehow, the kids become Christians, but they still have problems with their parents. Now, the parents should have really loved and respected them first, and they just normally responded. But they didn't. So it says, honor your father and mother. Well, my father's not honorable. Not lovable, nor honorable. One of the questions I asked, and they'll tell me this, I said, well, did he think his father loved him? Oh, no. Do you think his father respected him? Oh, no. He could never do anything right. I said, does he think his wife loves him? Oh, no. Does he think God loves him? Oh, no. He's not a Christian. I said, from your viewpoint, does he think his kids love him? Well, I'm not sure about that. Well, here you tell me, from his viewpoint, God doesn't love him, and his wife doesn't love him, his father didn't love him, and the kids don't love him, and you're sitting here wondering why he drinks too much. Yeah. Okay. So, we mentioned earlier, and there they are, but loving people, they respond and become Christians. I remember listening to Doug on a tape. I don't remember saying it to him. I just remember what he said, preaching. Yes.
I've got a question. When I was doing some reading on World War II, there was a lot of stories about when soldiers came back from the war, they had a hard time connecting with children that were born while they were abroad versus children that were born after they came back. If you weren't around when your sons were born, did you feel any issues of that?
Although I wasn't around for either Doug or Evan's birth. But I had some time with Doug after he was born, after he was 10 days. I had a year with him, maybe not quite a year. And so I got to know him, and Evan was born. And I didn't see him for 6 weeks after he was born. And so he's a stranger to me. When I knew Doug, but I didn't know Evan. So I had a little difficulty there adjusting. In fact, I had trouble adjusting with Doug because he was born in San Diego. I was in the Sea of Japan. So I came home. One year I was a bachelor, the next year I was a husband, the next year I was a father.
Yeah.
And I didn't catch up right away with my responsibilities for those things, but I knew I had to, so I did. But yes, that is a not that you think your wife had somebody else. It just the question is, how did this happen? I wasn't around. Yes, that's true. Back to my point.
Okay. You were listening to a tape by Doug?
Oh, Doug. And he asked me how he should respect a drunk in the gutter. And my dad just said, he'd go up to him and say, "Sir, what can I do to help you?" Respect has to do with the respecter, not the respectee. We think we have to have somebody to respect somebody, he's got to earn the respect. No, respect has to do with the respecter. It doesn't say fathers deserve respect. It says children obey your parents and Lord, honor your parent, father and mother. Honor has to do with this person, not with the other person deserves it. So you respect. In all these things, so he should have respected me, loved me, and things. Okay, I come up with a mechanic on how to solve this problem. This mechanic doesn't make any difference whether your father and mother are alive, whether they are very close to you or distant from you. It doesn't make any difference. The same mechanic. You write two letters to your parents. Do not telephone them. Do not email them. You write two handwritten letters. A handwritten letter tells the recipient that you care enough to write. And you write a letter to your father. You do not write, "Dear Mom and Dad." If you write, "Dear Mom and Dad," who answers the letter?
Mom.
So pretty soon, the correspondence is between Mom and the kids, not between. So you make him answer the letter. You write a letter to him only. And put it outside the envelope. "Mom, keep your hands off," because Mother thinks they are the sheriff of everything comes in the house. Not true. It's true. Okay. So, "Mom, keep your hands off." So, you write this letter to your father. First, you confess to him anything you have to confess about giving him a bad time when you were a teenager or any disobedience. Admit that you were wrong. Next, tell him how much you respect him. You say, "If I don't respect him, whose problem is that? I don't respect him." "Well, if he got respectable, I'd respect him." "No, he's not respectable because he never got respected." So it's you say, "Well, I don't respect him." Okay. Before you send the letter, confess that you don't. Get forgiven for not respecting him. And then write a real respectful letter to him. Third paragraph, you tell him how much you love him. You say, "Well, I don't love him either." I said, "Whose problem is that?" "That's not his. He's unlovable." "No, it's all right." Oh, in the command to love, it says, "Love God how much?"
"With all."
Everything, right? It says, "And love your wives as Christ loved the church." That's a lot. "Love your neighbor as you love yourself." That's a lot. It says, love the brothers as, okay. And it says, love your enemies. Who else is there? Okay. So if you don't love, it's your problem, not his problem. And you confess it, get forgiven for it, and write a paragraph of love. Third paragraph, you tell him how grateful you are. He said, "Well, I'm not grateful either." I said, "Whose problem is that?" Yeah, okay. So you take care of your problems and respect, love, and gratefulness. And get confess the date on that, and then tell them how grateful you are. And then ask him for his autobiography. He probably won't give it to you, but but he will be glad you want to know. there's a man here in town, very famous man. He's with the Lord now, very famous Christian man. He was the only man that flew over both Hiroshima and Nagasaki. He was in both planes.
Wow.
He invented the trigger that set off the atomic bomb, and he was just a very young man. He just died in his 90s recently. He named Larry Johnson. And Larry Johnson had a daughter named Lois. Well, Larry was a very quiet fellow. He was just an unassuming kind of guy. I told her to write a letter to her father. She said, "Live at home. Can I just talk to him?" I said, "Okay." I said, "But ask him for his autobiography." She came back to me, she said, "Ask him for his autobiography," and he never stopped talking.
Oh.
This guy that never talked. He was just so glad that somebody wanted to listen to him. She said, "I wanted to go to bed." Okay. People like to know that you want to know about them. Then ask him for advice. He said, "I don't like his advice." Okay, I didn't have you take it, but I do want you to ask for it. Because requested advice is much better than unrequested advice. Volunteered advice isn't very good. Request advice turns out much better. And request advice, you're much more willing to receive it than if it was just volunteered to you. Okay, when you send this letter, now even if you're very close to your father, when kid in the school practical Christianity, he said, "Well, I'm very close to my father, so I write that guy there, so it wouldn't hurt." A couple weeks later, he came back and he said, "I got a letter from my father." He said, "I wrote a letter like this to my father when I was your age, and boy, was it good to get one from you."
Wow.
Okay. I had another one. I was teaching the Seekers group at the Presbyterian Church. It was an evangelical college group at Presbyterian Church, and they had a faculty advisor that I'd met when I first come to town. At that time he wasn't a Christian. I think these kids led him to Christ. But he heard me teach the kids this. He's a faculty advisor. He was probably pretty close to 60 at the time. He said, "Well, Jim," said, "I write a letter like that to my father." I said, "Sure." So next time I said, "Seekers," he said, "I got a letter back from my mother. And my mother wrote to me and said, I've been married to your father for 60 years. And when he read your letter, it's the first time in 60 years I've seen tears in his eyes." Okay. Fathers are not expressive unless they lose their temper. But they like to be loved. They like to be respected. And if they don't have it, it's because they never got loved or respected. So you're it. You do both. Write the same kind of letter to your mother. Only put love in the first paragraph and respect in the second paragraph. And it'd be easier to say things because be grateful because you had 20 years of clean skivvies and things like that. Yes.
I know a teenager over in Pullman. I wish I could get him over to meet you. He's about 13. His father committed suicide and his mother is in substance abuse. That's why he's in foster care. How would you approach someone like him?
Well, first, what I would give him, personally, I'd give him a lot of love myself. I mean, so he gets love from someplace. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe get some other people who are in the giving business to do the same. Then I would seek to get to know the mother, because obviously she needs help. She needs help. She can't give because she's never gotten. And so she needs help. So it'll be different, but nevertheless, I don't want to say love is a cure-all, but you know, I might as well almost like you said. The question is not that it's not a cure-all, it's we can't get anybody to give it. A lot of people out there need it, receive it, but you got to be a giver.
Yeah, I tried to volunteer with the foster care thing, but I think because I was single, they were giving me a hard time about it.
Yeah. Sometimes people adopt parent little kids not because they just want children so bad, and that's not for the children's good; it's for their good. They need a baby, and so the adopted baby doesn't get much love as a natural born baby because the mother never carried the baby for 9 months. She didn't nurse the baby, and she thinks she's loving this baby, but just naturally, the little baby's not getting as much. And if he also inherited some other characteristics and had a bad 9 months, you know, all that's going to make it difficult. So unless you have this unlimited love from God, the agape love, parenting love is not enough. You got to have parenting love because you're a parent, but the love from God is what this child needs. And most parents don't have it to give, and they want the children because they want children. And they're not always up to it.
Yeah, he's about 13 right now. Yeah.
Okay, write this letter to your mother. And, oh, your father will read more his more than once. And your mother will gold plate hers and put it in the jewelry box. You'd be so glad to get it. Just nobody, you know, they'll try to explain it to you're a Christian now, they'll explain it the way you finally grew up or something like that. They come up with explanations for you for doing it, but nevertheless, they still like it. I was teaching it to a summer school practical Christianity one summer, and there's a PhD candidate in economics in WSU, and we had the class in the Delta House, Delta Tau Delta, for 8 weeks, I think, 3 hours a day. And in the fall, I taught that in the class, and in the fall, I was teaching again to a noon Bible study at WSU. He was in the class. He said, I heard this last summer. He said, my father kicked me out of the house when I was 16 and told me he'd never, ever see me again. Back in Dakota someplace. And he said, meantime, I haven't seen him. Meantime, I became a Christian. Married a Christian, I'm getting my PhD at WSU. I haven't seen him since I was 16. Hadn't seen him. In the meantime, my parents were getting a divorce, but they were living in separate rooms in the house. And I wrote two letters, one to my mother and one to my father. But it took me 4 days to write each letter, so they got sent 4 days apart. For some reason, they arrived in the mail at the same time. Addressed each other. They were both happened to be home. They took their own letter, went to their own room, read the letter, came back and traded letters, went back and read the letter to the other one. And they came out and met again, and the father said to his mother, I'm flying out to Pullman to see my son. And this guy said, I've seen my father since last summer. He came out to see me. My mother, who was a Nisei, Japanese second generation kid, just like that with his father. I told him what to do. No way, he wasn't going to do it. And finally decided to write a letter, a real blasty letter, just tell his father wherever he did it wrong. Just was doing that. And he changed his mind and wrote my kind of letter instead of the kind he wanted to write. And he said, his father lived in Spokane. And he said, my father came down from Spokane right away to see me. He said he's now dying of cancer. And I sit by his bedside reading the scripture to him. But because He said, well, your father should have reached out first and didn't. Maybe he didn't know how. Never received it himself. But you're an adult. You're a Christian. And you can give it. And they need it and give it to them. Well, suppose they have died. A large part of the reason for the litter is not just for their sake, but for your sake. Because they say you'll find out, you have to confess the respect, the love and that gratitude. So you take all those problems and write the letter anyhow to your father and mother. And recognize that writing that letter took care of your problems. One other fellow, also from Dakotas, his parents were divorced and remarried to his step-grandfathers and step here and there. He said, well, I wrote to my parents, but how about should I write to my step-parents? Yeah, I said, write to everybody. So a few years back, he was now out of school, and he was over in Federal Way or Tacoma or someplace. And his cousin came out from the hometown in Dakota, looked him up. He said, Ed, remember that letter you wrote to your grandpa? He said, yeah, I remember. He said he carries it around town. He shows the people and says, I got a letter from Ed. Probably the only letter he ever got. No. People get, well, you can see the result of it. You just visit some of the nursing homes and find out how many people come to visit. They're abandoned. Okay. Now, if you can't write the letter, still, those are the things you have to take care of. And you become the giver. And all these are giving things. And you say, well, they might not respond. That's always a possibility. They might not. But I got more. Well, there's one girl. I took a sabbatical up in Vancouver, British Columbia, and we took some auditing courses at Regent College. And we got to know a secretary there at the college. And she came down to go to the School of Practical Christianity from Vancouver. And in this class, she came to me after, and she said, my father molested me from infancy on up to 16. And I left home. He was a medical doctor. And she said, I left home. Oh, what caused this is I said, after writing this letter, and then you go home, I want you to hug your father. And hug him like you've never hugged him before. And she said, do I hug my father? I said, yeah, you write him a letter. He's not in Ontario. And I said, okay, you need a father. Can I be your father? Can I substitute your father? No. Okay. So you got a father. He's not acting like a father. So you write to him and say, Dad, I need a father. Are you willing to be my father? And the father came out to Vancouver to see her. And repented. Now not a Christian, but still wanted to be a father. And maybe 10 years went by, 10 or maybe 20, I don't know. I get a phone call here. And I said, what's this girl? She's married back in Ontario. I said, does your husband know about your father? Yes, he knows about my father. I said, well, how's it going? She said, he lives 20 minutes from us and we're reaching him. So, you may not feel like it, but you don't do how you feel, because your feeling is probably sin. You think biblically and get your life in line with the Bible, and and turn your hearts to the fathers. Now, that I said that was a prophecy of John the Baptist, because you see it in Luke. In Luke 1:17, I think. Verse 16, many of the people of Israel will be bring back to the Lord our God. And he will go on before this is Zechariah praying. He will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the disobedient of the wisdom to the. So this is a quotation of that last verse in the Old Testament. And says this is John the Baptist's assignment. Now he just quotes half, and he quotes half and says, turn the hearts of the children to the fathers. And the other one says, turn the hearts of the fathers to the children first. Questions? Yes.
No, a question, but once upon a time, a long time ago in a land far away.
That's it?
I said, once upon a time, a long time ago in a land far away.
Right, okay.
The Elijah House in Spokane was putting on a men's seminar.
Okay.
And they covered this.
Okay.
I was teaching school. I was probably in my late 30s, 40s, something like that. And one scripture he pointed out, of course, Ephesians 6:1, and then Matthew 7:1, it says, judge not that you be not judged, because the judgment you pass on others, you get back. And he says, you put the finger of someone, and three of them are coming back to you, Father God. And so is any area that is not going well with you, that is evidently an area in your life that you're not honoring your parents. And I was always behind the eight ball financially and just one thing or another. So the principal where I was teaching was my father, and I got down on my knees and asked him to forgive me. And went through that, and then I wrote my folks a letter like this and asked them to forgive me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they probably did the best they knew, but whether they did or not, my problem was to forgive
them. That's right.
And I remember them writing back. My mom said, well, son, of course we forgive you. We don't, you know, they didn't say just you all that. But anyway, it was a good turning point in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very powerful thing to do. Fortunately, that was while my folks were still alive. And when I resigned from teaching, went to Iowa to go to chiropractic college, where I met this lovely young lady. I stopped up at WEAC to visit my dad to tell him goodbye. He was 85.
Mm-hmm.
I was 40-some. And I said, Dad, I love you. And he said, well, I love you too, son. That was the first time we ever said that. But I was so glad that we got that.
Yeah.
So this is a very precious teaching that you're teaching here.
I know that I didn't write this kind of letter to my father, but I wrote him because he never answered. And I get three or four scratched lines back, you know, but it was he wrote back. And I think he had six sons, and all daughters-in-law, very close to my parents. But I think my father was closer to Bessie than he was to the other. And I think largely because of my correspondence when I was a bachelor to him. It said, because all his parents were... for my son to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he thought I couldn't possibly do the wrong thing, so I must have. But because I cared for him. Okay, I get more response from this talk as far as application. And for me, their talk, except maybe the bitterness talk and confession of sin talk. But I gave this talk at Urbana to about 50 kids. And I'd gone to Urbana in 67, and most of the kids there came from Hope. whole households, whole families. In 93, most of the kids didn't come from whole families. So these people are going to be foreign missionaries with this kind of a history. And so it was like shooting ducks in a barrel when I talked on the subject. They all had the... So, when I said, well, you can always write your brothers and sisters, or anybody, any kind of expression of respect and love to anybody is a good practice. And
I suppose it could even be parent to child.
Yeah. I'm not sure the subject next week. Humility will be one of the hours next week.
What is it? Humility?
Humility.
No.
Now, this is 6 weeks. Next week would be the last. We can go longer if you wanted to go longer. Because I haven't covered everything you can cover. But I didn't want to make it sound like it was never ending. It is never ending. But so if you want it, you can let me know next week if you wanted to go another week. We can go a week at a time and new subjects. We got 10 minutes, so still open to some questions, or I might think of something else.
One of the things that they taught, they called it the Elijah task, from the hearts of the fathers to the children, the children of the fathers. Say, go back in your life, say the first 5 years, because usually your personality is developed during that first 5 years. Draw a line, and above, put the positive things you remember, and below, put the negative things.
Okay.
Because usually it's those negative things that you hang on to and you need to forgive. So that was one of the exercises to do to figure out. And also, what area of your life that's not going well, that's where you may be judging rather than forgiving.
Right.
And that kind of helped to solidify things and make them more real rather than just some vague, hey, forgive me, you know, I was wrong. That was a good...
Sorry to interrupt you.
And another thing he taught was, later on in that chapter of Matthew, it says, whatever you bind on earth is bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. So if we're holding revenge, hatred, or unforgiveness, Jesus, when he got through teaching the disciples what we call the Lord's Prayer, in the 14th verse he says, for if you do not forgive, those you can't be forgiven. So it's a very important thing. And you're talking about those generational things. The way to break that is forgiveness.
That's right. People want to be forgiven. They don't want to forgive. Yes, Robert.
Beyond the basics of forgiveness, how do you approach when you're trying to... Actually, this is a better question. How do you deal with issues of your parents, honoring your parents? Say if your parents are not Christians, they certainly do not live a Christian lifestyle, and you're dealing with your own parenting and your own children. Say it's not just an issue about just you and your parents, but your parents and your children. You know, they're saying, oh yeah, I go out and... Don't worry about that, you know, that marijuana stuff or the drinking stuff. You know, don't overdo it, but blah, 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 you know, that kind of thing.
Okay,
that's how your grandparents lived a lot.
Now, it's difficult to... I know people like this who say, I can't take my children to see their grandparents because their profanity is so awful. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. And I said, no, you can. Well, I don't insist on it, but if anybody's going to love your parents into the kingdom, it'll be their grandchildren. And you don't want to make them, but they love their grandparents. And you can teach them. Oh, excuse me. I had a second cousin, married second time. Her second husband came to our house one day and took my 4-year-old brother. I was probably 9. Took my 4-year-old brother outside and taught him all the bad words he could think of. this is a grown man. And they had a little Pekingese dog, and they kicked the dog all the time. This is the family. So anyhow, my 4-year-old brother went and practiced his words on his mother. It was fixed that one real fast, but anyhow, I know that you can take care of that. Now, if they're more active, like molesting your children or something like that, then that's different. But if they're just being normal non-Christians, alcohol, drugs, things like that, then of course your problem is your love for them, but I think you can do that. Yes.
I had years ago wanted to spend time with orphans and widows. They are really hard to find now, in that the state takes care of them, and usually those you find are ones who won't even take what the state gives. Or it's
there are those kind of people, yes.
And it's just, yeah. So tell me about this Wednesday.
Okay, well, the key thing is a fellow named Matt Becker. Matt Becker became a Christian 3 years ago. I was talking with Pat Greenfield at Butcher's, and this Matt Becker came up and interrupted, didn't say excuse me, just took over the conversation. And I saw his bitterness, so I handed him how to be free from bitterness. And he said, well, I could use this, and left. So I got his email address from Pat. I emailed him and said, Matt, let's get together. He wrote back, he said, I'm one bitter dude. People try to help me and they're not succeeded. You can try if you want to, but forget it, it's in the family blood. Now this guy lived for money, sex, rugby, revenge, bitterness. Everybody in town hated him, and he returned the compliment. He just was an angry man. When not only was he angry, he was a type A over the top. He just made decisions for everybody. And we couldn't get together. So I was talking to Pat again, and he interrupts again. And I said, Matt, you and I were going to get together. He said, I'm in and out like this. You can catch me. You can have the time. I said, I only need 2 minutes. He's okay. Next time I see you, I say go. And time my 2 minutes. He left. Next time I saw him, I talked with somebody in Butcher's. And I realized he's in the next table with his preschool little girl. After I'd finished talking, I turned around and handed him my testimony. I'd been saved. He said, I'll read this right now. I said, not with me. I've got another appointment. So I left. That was the third time I saw him, 1 minute. Fourth time I saw him, I came to Butcher's. He was sitting at the big table right in front. But my appointment was sitting farther back, and I could see him. And he said, I read your story, and I can identify with it. I said, Matt, I'm sorry. I've got another appointment. That was the fourth time I saw him, 1 minute each. Next time I heard from him, I got an email from him. He said, I need a Bible, and my mother needs a Bible. So I took a bag full of Bibles. We made an appointment, showed him Bibles. He took a couple for each. I said, okay, now let's talk about the real issue. All of his sin and bitterness and stuff. Didn't need to. He'd been saved. He loved everybody this side of the horizon. His mother came to me. He was 37 years old. He said he never read a book in his life. And he hadn't. Since then, he's read the whole Bible. But he's the one that put together this. He's got a lot of property in town. He has put these guys to work. Not all of them, some. Hadn't made them a place to live in. But he started this Supper for Jesus. And right now it runs 30 or 40 guys, plus maybe 10 Christians. Would you say that's about right? 10 Christians and sit at a different table. And so they eat. And then Ben Merkel, Doug's son-in-law, my grandson-in-law, has been teaching through the book of Acts. And they all sit and listen. Oh, sometimes one guy will get up and leave, and sometimes somebody will come there drunk. But amazing that how these people sit and take all this. But they all need personal attention. Yeah, that's why the Christians are, they give personal attention. And you may not, but you may not be able to hit it off on any one person, but just your presence is another stabilizing event. So it lasts about an hour and a half. And other people have taken, Matt's normally there, but he's gone for about 6 weeks. And other people take the responsibility of putting it together. And I think he's gotten Christ Church to pick up the tab for the food. And I don't know whether we're renting the building or whether we get it free. But the Assembly of God Church, Life Center. And I know all souls give the building free to the women. And the women are the same thing. They don't look as beat up as the guys, but they're post-abortion or divorcees or single mothers or things like that. And the whole, they're probably younger. True. Okay, well, thank you for coming.